Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers, the editor behind the scenes at the Choice Literacy site. I love our community because we advocate for every teacher as an expert professional in the classroom. We believe students should have a choice and voice in what they read and write. Our podcast highlights the weekly newsletter, including a full article on a timely topic. You'll find the best tools and latest ideas, plus get to know our contributors who are just as funny and smart as you. Most importantly, keep your soul aloft as you empower student choice and voice in your corner of the world. I'm happy to share this week's lead essay with you because I love fresh starts and the idea of preparing for a fresh start. Plan a Fresh Start by me, Ruth Ayers. I know a lot of people look to January as a time for a fresh start. I, however, believe December is an excellent time for a fresh start. First, there are a lot of twinkle lights in December. It feels magical, like I can do anything. Because even if things don't go as planned, there's still a little sparkle in the world. Usually it takes a fresh start time to get going in my life, so I appreciate the extra glitter in the dark world while my fresh start takes hold. Also, there are only a few work weeks in December, if you keep a traditional school calendar, which I do. This makes setting new routines feel possible. I have a little bit of wiggle room. Sure, there are things disrupting my routine because I'm on holiday, but it seems like that's just more of a reason to figure out what my priorities are and get them locked into my life. My mom always encouraged New Year's resolutions, and my dad always poked fun at the tradition. My mom believed in thinking ahead and making a plan for the year so it wouldn't slip through your fingers like sand through an hourglass. Dad believed if you wanted to do something, you did it, no matter the time of year. As an Enneagram Type 3, I believe they are both right. In my 20s, I began setting intentions rather than resolutions. Perhaps it's wordsmithing, but intentions feel like fuel behind a fresh start. Over the years, I've also toyed with mantras because they felt a little livelier than resolutions. 15 years ago, after reading an article by Debbie McComber that my mom mailed me folded inside an old-fashioned handwritten note, I began selecting a word to live by each year. A few years later, the concept became wildly popular, led by Allie Edwards. No matter how you approach fresh starts, I think they deserve to be planned and celebrated. I'm going through the final days of 2020 with my heart wide open and ready to welcome a new word into my life. I'm reflecting on the year and considering my priorities. I'm strolling through my small town well after dark when the twinkle lights are blazing and reminding me anything is possible. I'm sure my one little word for 2021 will find me soon. This is the final Big Fresh issue of 2020. We will take a two-week break and return on January 8th. I hope you have time to slow down and consider a fresh start. I'm sure this issue will inspire you. We'll be posting more inspiration and reminders of favorite articles from the past on our social media feeds. If you don't already follow us, we'd love for you to join us on your favorite social media stomping grounds. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Choice Literacy. Finally, the Big Fresh podcast is now available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Our articles and videos feature full-time teachers and literacy leaders who spend every day in classrooms. Classic classroom content is updated continuously with 4 to 6 new features published each week.
This week's theme is Fresh Starts. In the article, Writing Work Plans, Brian Seppe empowers students to make their own plans during writing workshop. Brian is a gifted how-to writer, and this article will not disappoint. It is packed full of steps and templates so you can empower your students to set writing goals too. Brian also created a TikTok video to share this concept with teachers in his professional learning network. I must admit, before Brian shared this video with me, I didn't see any reason to dip my toes into the TikTok pool. Now I'm hooked on Brian's channel. Make sure to check out this link. In her signature style, Where Heart and Mind Meet When Writing About Classroom Practices, Dana Murphy suggests three ways to empower student choice in workshop and get more students to accept the invitations we offer. Dana's article is titled Extending Invitations in Workshop, Ways to Empower Student Choice. Are you looking for ideas to breathe new life into your classroom library? Inspired by a closet cleanout, Leanne Eck suggests that a seasonal rotation is also good for classroom libraries. Check out her article, Rotation of the Classroom Library. In this week's Encore video, Christy Rush Levine's 8th graders lead their classmates in a Voices mantra. This shared chant created together starts each class with a sense of community and strength. I've been fortunate to be in Christy's classroom and watch this chant in action. One of the lines was "Write unapologetically." I must admit, I still carry that with me as a writer. I imagine Christy's students continue to carry truth from their mantra as they grow up too.
Our contributors are listening and looking hard for those spontaneous, teachable moments when they can move a child forward as a reader and writer. Each week, we offer free articles to empower all educators to do the same.
With our theme of fresh starts, we included Reset by Christy Rush Levine as a free article. Christy finds her students sometimes need to stop and be challenged to think in more positive ways about their reading abilities. She describes how she designs mini lessons for impromptu resets in her middle school classroom. In creating a manifesto, I explain why writing a manifesto may be the best way to learn what you truly believe about teaching, learning, and literacy. I've used this activity across the country in professional learning sessions with teachers. It never disappoints. Allie Edwards encourages selecting one little word to lead you through the year. On her blog, she explains the history and introduces her 2020 one little word. And if you're curious how teachers have used one little word in their classrooms over the years, you can discover Margaret Simon's process or Annie Campbell's Big Idea. I'm sure they will inspire you to help your students have a fresh start in 2021. Course update. Some of the contributors have joined together to make a course about empowering choice. I can't wait for you to have access to this because you'll see them teaching in masks and teaching remotely while holding on to their roots of offering student choice and voice.
Our Leaders Lounge is dedicated to literacy coaches and school leaders. Our contributors share their best advice for working one-on-one with teachers in coaching cycles, hosting professional development sessions, and designing demonstration lessons and study groups. Our Literacy Leader members will find 2 to 4 new features each week.
This week, in the article, Cheering on Teachers Through Seasons of Change, Heather Fisher inspires us to do the same with these three simple and meaningful ideas. Heather suggests 1, a shout out board, 2, sending quotes with personalized voice messages, and 3, a good old fashioned handwritten note. Find out more by reading her article. The Center for Creative Leadership offers 10 leadership resolutions for a successful new year. Stephanie Affinito guides us in transforming a coaching vision into a practical coaching menu so teachers can choose their ideal way to work with an instructional coach. This article was so wise in the way it takes a vision to a coaching menu that I invited Stephanie to join us and share more about her thinking. I'm glad to share our conversation with you. Stephanie Affinito is joining us on the podcast today. She wrote the article, From a Coaching Vision to a Coaching Menu, and I wanted her to talk a little bit more about her thinking. Stephanie is a university professor at the University of Albany, and she works with teachers who are digging into literacy. She does have a passion for coaching, and you may know her from her book, Literacy Coaching. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Ruth. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today.
Yeah, we're glad that we can just talk a little bit more about your article. So I was really intrigued as I was reading your article, and at the beginning, you're talking about considering a vision. And something that you suggest is that coaches just take time to write their own job description that only includes activities that matter most to them. And I was wondering if you could talk about the reason you advocate for coaches to create visions inspired by the things that matter most to them.
Absolutely. When I first became a literacy coach, I think it was back in 2002, 2003, it was at a time where coaching was new and no one really knew exactly what the coaching role was supposed to be. And so I was actually hired as a coach of the coaches. So not only did I not quite understand what a coach did, I certainly didn't understand what a coach of the coaches did. And so it was something that I, along with I think every other instructional coach, figures out as we go along. And one thing I noticed with the multiple coaches that I worked with is that we all had a different way of doing that. Even though we were all in the same kind of coaching cohort, what we did each day in our building could look drastically different from one person to the next. And I was fascinated by that. And being the person who needed to support them, I needed to figure out how. And so I actually did my dissertation research on coaching and tried to figure out exactly what it was coaches did, why they did it, and if it was effective. And one of the big pieces from my research showed that each of the coaches I worked with had a clear love and passion for the position, especially one particular area. One coach might like working with assessment data. Another one might really love designing professional learning. And so each one of them had those passions, but unfortunately, the position was often fragmented and shifted over time in ways that took them away from that passion because of all of the other things that bubbled up that coaches were asked to do. And that not only impacted the effectiveness of their position, but it really impacted the teacher's perception of the coaching role as well. And so in that research and all of my work with coaches over time, I really learned that coaches need to hold on to what matters most to them, to keep their spirits going about the coaching position, to keep them excited about doing this kind of work every day. And sure, we rely on research of what we know about coaching, and we rely on organizations like NCTE and ILA and ISTE that can help us figure out what those roles might look like. But overall, it really comes down to the one who's leading the learning of others should feel invigorated by that position and feel empowered and effective in that role. And so I think creating a vision for what you want your role to look like based on what matters most for you really has the potential to fuel your coaching spirit over time in ways that other options of arriving at that job description just can't quite accomplish.
Yes, it's so true. In fact, there's an article in the queue that'll be published in the next few weeks by David Pittman. He is an instructional coach outside of Chicago. And the article title is, "And Other Duties as Assigned." So, you know, what you're alluding to is true for coaches. There's oftentimes a lot of other things that are put on their plates, which is why I think the idea of creating a vision based on the things that matter most to the heart of the coach makes a lot of sense. Stephanie, you've written a lot about coaching vision, and I love this article because it takes in that vision and pushes us to create what you're calling a coaching menu or a choice board. So it's the idea of creating a menu to invite teachers into partnerships with you. So in your article, you give an example of a coaching menu, and I just want, you know, listeners to be able to kind of picture this because they've probably not seen the article quite yet. So I'm looking at your menu, and it's a grid with 9 different squares, and it looks to me like you're organizing it. So there's a column called Let's Learn, and a column called Let's Collaborate, and a column called Let's Create. And when I'm looking under it, it seems like you're categorizing it maybe on the intensity that the coaching relationship would be. Do you want to talk about how you're setting that menu up?
We talked about just how important it is to create a vision for your coaching role based on what matters most to you. And that might be a difficult thing to do, but the really difficult thing to do is to actually put that vision into practice, right? There's always so many things that could be, vying for your attention or other options that might be putting demands on the position. And so one thing I've learned is we have to figure out a way to get that vision that really works for us into a concrete, tangible form so that everyone else around us knows that vision too. Your principal, any other administrators, the teachers you work with, and even the school community at large needs to know what a coach does, but specifically what you as their instructional coach does, so that they know what kind of partnerships might be possible, and you know that you're offering ideas for those partnerships based on what you know is very aligned to your vision. So we know that coaching only works if teachers invite you into a coaching partnership. And so that means coaching needs to be very responsive to lots of individual teachers. What might be an ideal coaching cycle to one teacher might look very different to another. What might look like coaching support to one very interested teacher might look very different from one that is more hesitant and unsure of what you two might collaborate on together. So the idea of bringing that vision to life in a tangible way doesn't have to be a boring job description or something that's posted somewhere in a manual. It can come to life in a coaching menu or a coaching choice board, where based on those big ideas of what you hope for the coaching position, you then offer some tangible, concrete ways that teachers could engage with you. So that way, you know what you're putting out there as possibilities are all directly aligned to the kind of coaching work that you want to do, and it offers teachers a choice so that they feel like your coaching partnership matches their vision as well, and gives them an entry point into a partnership in ways that are comfortable for everyone.
That makes so much sense. So under like Let's Learn, you have Let's Learn More About Your Students Together. I have a read aloud perfect for your students, and I'll leave it as a gift for your classroom library too. So that might be for a person who is just maybe cracking their door a little bit to let you in. And that when you put it here on the menu, it feels like it just adds, it validates that that kind of work is important too. And then you also have under like, let's collaborate, need a helping hand to plan virtual instruction. You got it. So there's an opportunity for people to work a little closer with you, and you're doing some co-planning and working together at that level.
The coaching vision and how it ends up in the choice board needs to work for the coach, but it also needs to offer a range of options and, as you mentioned, a range of intensities for teachers to decide that they want to partner with you. So there's a little bit for everyone, but still aligns with what we know and want to preserve in that coaching position in the school.
You're just finding the sweet spot of coaching, taking what the coach cares a lot about and creating some options to give teachers just a vision or opportunities in order to work with the coach.
That is exactly it. It is the sweet spot, Ruth. That is perfect.
I was glad your article closed with some ways to share the coaching menu with teachers. I was a coach for more than 10 years, and sometimes I would create something or have these opportunities, and then it almost fell short in getting the information to the teachers. And so you just gave some bulleted options that are simple and wise in order to get this out to teachers.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways. It could be very simple, where it's that mass email out to all of the teachers that you work with, hoping that, you know, someone takes you up on an offer. It could be more personalized emails or conversations, depending on if you're in person or working virtually. And even setting something up like a drop-in coffee time, you know, coffee with a coach, where you can come talk about the options and collaborate, whether that's in person or a virtual cup of coffee as well.
Stephanie, I admire your passion for supporting coaches. You know, we talked about your book at the opening here, but that's called Literacy Coaching, Transforming Teaching and Learning with Digital Tools and Technologies. And you have been spending so much time building up your website that it's becoming a go-to place for coaches. And I'm so excited about your new podcast. It's a quick listen that gives a powerful tip just for it's practical things that we can do in the classroom. And so what I'm wondering, and what I'm really curious about, is as you're thinking about coaches, is what do you believe coaches need right now in this really odd time of education, where some coaches are working remote, some are hybrid, some are traditional? What is it that you believe coaches need in order to serve in the best possible ways right now?
My answer is probably not going to be a typical one that someone might expect to hear. You know, we're hearing things about how we need to be flexible, and we need to take some time and just be more patient with what's going on, and we need to be persistent and keep trying to support teachers. And all of those kinds of things are important. But I think what coaches need now more than ever is a mindset for lifelong learning themselves, a mindset of innovation that says, you know, we got this. We can embrace these changes, not only because we have to, but because we want to. And along with that mindset, coaches need innovative support to help them continue to lead the learning of the teachers they work with that kind of positivity and with that kind of, you know, innovation that teaching at home in a pandemic is requiring us. And coaches are constantly leading the learning of others, but what about them? Who has their back? And that's where my work comes in. That's where my passion is, of how can we better support those who are constantly leading the learning of others so that they're able to do that work. They're not getting burnt out. They're not exhausted. They're not banging their heads in frustration on the other side of a Zoom screen, trying to figure out how to best support teachers and feel like they're being effective. And so I think in terms of that support, you know, what do they need? They need a community. They need a collaborative space where they can come together and just talk about what's going on. Sure, some venting along the way, but a place where they can get that support. And that support might be a quick idea to try in their coaching. It might be an article or a blog that helps them think about something in a different way. Or it might be professional learning for themselves, where when they place themselves in that role of a learner, they realize so many things that they could bring to their teachers, who hopefully will bring them to their students. I've been lucky enough over the past several months, since the beginning of summer, to meet with a group of coaches monthly. We came together over the summer and we've continued that work throughout the school year. And that has been the thing that has kept me afloat. I'm pretty sure some of them would say it is what kept their coaching spirits high as well. So I think coaches need to be really proactive. They need to try to maintain their own learning in this crazy time and really reach out to other coaches who are doing the same. Boost their professional learning network so they realize, well, there may only be one coach in your building, or you know, maybe there's one or two or three in your district. There are thousands of us all across the country doing this work together. And so we need to really bring ourselves together in that community so that we can figure out how to best do that for teachers who then ideally are doing the same for their students.
You're spot on about coaches needing a community. Here in my corner of the world, we have a consortium of schools, and the coaches come together for regular meetings. And as you were talking, I was thinking about how much I take that for granted, just that meeting of people who are in a like position. Because the truth of the matter is, when you're in a school, you can sometimes feel alone because there's not a lot of people doing the same work as you are as an instructional coach. And the ability to now connect online is huge for instructional coaches, because we realize that we're not alone and that we're all still pressing forward.
Yeah, and that's the one thing, Ruth, that I want to keep, right? When this pandemic is over and we are all back to teaching, the way we were used to, there are things that I'd love to hang on to that I wouldn't have been able to even know was out there, right, without having gone through this. So the community of coaches that was built solely as a result of the pandemic, or some of the new innovative ways that we are supporting teachers, we may not have thought of or have been pushed to consider until now. And so I like to hang on to that kind of mindset and really try to take away the good that we're learning as we move forward.
Exactly. And I think the coaching menus that we were talking about and that you wrote this article about is just one way that we can do it. It's a great way to offer a fresh start and for coaches to do some thinking about what opportunities can I offer to teachers, even when things may be a little different than what they've been like in the past. Thanks, Stephanie, for joining us on the Big Fresh podcast.
Thanks for having me, Ruth.
Choice Literacy is a proudly independent community. We are not associated with any commercial publisher. We don't recommend packaged or scripted programs. Our contributors write for educators just like themselves, who are figuring things out by listening to students and reflecting on each day. Thanks for joining me for the Big Fresh Choice Literacy podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers, the editor of the Choice Literacy site.
We will take a 2-week break and return on January 8th. The theme is choice.
You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes, or sign up for the Big Fresh newsletter so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep offering choice and voice to students in what they read and write. And don't forget to keep your soul aloft. Shine on, everyone.